The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So I'd like to start this little talk on emotions with a story that I think I first read it in one of Jack Kornfield's books, like, you know, so many years ago. But it has really stayed with me because it has, well, I'll just share the story. So it's about, maybe you might know this, maybe you've read the same Jack Kornfield books I have, but it's so it starts that there's a poison tree, a tree that has fruit that is poisoned. And when some people see this poison tree, this poisoned fruit, they just see, oh my gosh, this is terrible, and we got to cut this down. We got to get rid of this tree so that this fruit doesn't harm anybody. And let's make sure, you know, we want to protect people and make sure that this doesn't happen. And this often, this idea of like, oh, we got to get rid of it, is kind of like our initial response when there's an uncomfortable emotion or an uncomfortable experience, like, oh, I got to get rid of this. For example, when we encounter maybe we have a little bit of aggression inside. If we, like, sometimes people are perfectly mild-mannered, and then when they're driving, they get to be a little bit aggressive and accelerating to, I don't know, to make sure that they get in the line first or something like this. Or maybe we notice that we have a little bit of compulsion, that we find that we're just like feeling compelled to do a particular activity that doesn't seem to help us. Maybe we're always grabbing our phone and looking at our phone, even though we know it's not in our best interest to always be on the phone. Or maybe there's this way in which we feel like how much fear we have, and we discover how much fear is just driving our behavior in such a way. So it wouldn't be surprising that when we notice these things about ourselves, and which, you know, meditation practice, Buddhist spiritual practice is so much about this, about understanding ourselves better, that when we first encounter it, we want to just get rid of it, cut down this tree. But in this story, they'd say that some individuals who've been practicing longer have some more spiritual maturity. I'll just use that expression. I think Jack uses that expression. And they might see this same poison tree, this tree that has a poison fruit, and they have a different response. They're saying like, oh, there's a tree that has poison. Let's put a fence around it, not to harm anybody. So recognizing that the tree has its right to be there, we don't have to cut it down. We're just going to protect everybody around it and make sure that it doesn't harm any. We can say that this isn't fueled by compassion, but this movement of the heart of, you know, not wanting anybody to suffer and to make sure that other people aren't suffering. So out of kindness, they build this fence around it. Whereas before, maybe cutting it down was out of fear, or maybe there was some aggression there too. So this is actually a profound shift in the relationship to the poison. One from fear or aggression, like, let's get rid of it, to one that's some kindness and some care for the tree and compassion for other people. It's just really different. Different way of being with what's difficult or uncomfortable. And then there might be somebody who sees this tree, who's traveled even further on this spiritual path, and they encounter this tree and see this poison fruit, and their response is, oh, fantastic, here's this poison fruit. Great. And they dissect it and figure out some of the ingredients. They add other things to it and make medicine. Medicine for themselves and medicine for others. there's this way, just, you know, just being with the experience, investigating the properties, if you will, bringing in some other ingredients and recognizing, oh yeah, it's not that this is something so bad. It also can be helpful. It also can be something that is supportive. And I know for me personally, when I first started in Buddhist practice and I did chaplaincy training and was a chaplain for a little while, I felt, as part of the chaplaincy training, we read this book, and I confess I don't remember any of the contents of the book. This was quite some time ago, but I remember the title of the book, The Wounded Healer. And the premise was that these difficulties that we have actually turn out to be a strength, partly because maybe we can recognize when other people have the similar difficulties that we had, and we can have empathy. We can meet them in a way that maybe others couldn't meet them. Or there's a way that maybe with some of our woundedness, quote unquote, enables us to show up with some authenticity, or to, instead of trying to hide behind a sense of perfection or something like this, just recognize, you know, look, I'm human too, and I've had some experiences. It doesn't mean that they're going out sharing all their dark, deep secrets with everybody, but there's this humanness that comes from this idea. So there's a way that through respect of the fruit, this poison fruit, through understanding this poison fruit, they see in a way that's different than what most people would say that want to get rid of it, or maybe have compassion towards it, but to actually see that there's something, that there's a gift here, there's a medicine here that maybe isn't visible. Maybe it's not until it's investigated or mixed with other things, but this willingness to hang out with it and to see and to maybe experience and examine what's here that can be medicine. And this can be a fantastic way to be with all the difficulties we find in our lives. There's ways in which we can learn so much about ourselves, so much about the human condition. And it turns out also to be a way that connects us with others. Our woundedness, I'm using this word, just a generic word, our, here's something else from Jack Kornfield that I appreciate. He calls this unfinished business of the heart. Some of this unfinished business of the heart, you know, lots of people have unfinished business of the heart. I'm not sure I know anybody who doesn't. And to just recognize this about ourselves kind of also helps connect us with others. So you might be saying, okay, so this poison tree, what does this have to do with our everyday emotions? I want to say something that many of us come to Buddhist practice because we have difficulties, we have suffering, we have dukkha. And we might have like started a meditation practice, this idea with this wish, whether it was explicit or implicit, that, okay, if I can just meditate correctly, then this will go away. You know, maybe that's some version of this, that I won't feel this anymore if I can just learn this meditation thing correctly or do some of this Buddhist practices, the Eightfold Path or something like this. So we might come to practice hoping to not feel so much because it's uncomfortable. And it's surprising and maybe disappointing to discover that actually this practice is about that we don't feel things. In fact, I would say that we feel them more fully. It's just that the problemness gets drained out of them. It's uncomfortable, but we're okay with being uncomfortable. It's not the end of the world being uncomfortable. So it's maybe this movement towards spiritual maturity is not about becoming a different person. It's not about becoming somebody who doesn't have emotions or only has like certain emotions and not other ones. But instead, it's our relationship to emotions shifts and changes. As I said, they're no longer problems. It's just what's happening next. And it's uncomfortable. Maybe it's not what we want, but we have the capacity to hold it and to be with it instead of immediately trying to go chop down the tree or build a fence around it and make not go near it, you know, just kind of avoid it. So with practice, we don't erase our history. We don't have it become a different people that have different temperaments. Practice isn't about becoming somebody else, you know, this antiseptic version. Instead, we might expand our range of emotions. There's a way, maybe because if we don't want to feel them, that we are kind of like just allowing this small little range. We don't, the deep love and joy maybe isn't accessible because we're trying to avoid the deep pain and grief or anger. And so we've just kind of said, okay, well, there's just this small little range that we allow ourselves. And so mindfulness practice, just being with our experience as best we can, is a way that can really help shift this relationship to our emotions. There can be this, I like this word, metabolism. They kind of, you know, maybe a transformation and evolving, a shifting of the, not only the emotions themselves, but our relationship to emotions. Both of these happen, both of these movements happen with meditation practice. For example, maybe there's some anger about, I mean, there's plenty of things to be angry about. I don't even have to give I don't even have to give an example. All of us will find something. We all have something, right? But it's quite something to feel, just to be with the experience of the anger. To feel maybe the heat in the face. For me, sometimes I feel the heat in my face. And it's funny how my arms get activated too. There's kind of like this feeling like I want to do something. And maybe there's the heart rate gets a little bit faster. Or, you know, it's not everybody has the exact same somatic signature for each emotion. Usually they're on the front of the torso and the face and the head. But it's quite something to feel the anger and to feel all the thoughts that are happening. Like, oh my gosh, I can't believe they did this and I'm going to do that. And, you know, this needs to be done and all this kind of stuff. And to just feel the bodily experience as best you can. The mind is going to protest and spin and then come back to the bodily experience. And what you'll discover is that the emotions rise up and then they pass away. And maybe it's not that they go away completely, but the surge of them has gone up and then it diminishes. If we can just hang out with the experience as best we can. And so this practicing with emotions is one way we might describe it is to make friends with them. Making friends. This is one way to have a relationship with them. And then there's a way in which having this, maybe to be a companion or to sit next to the emotional experience, is a way that alone can really shift the emotion itself, because there's so often we have like aversion to aversion, or we're angry that there's anger, or there's a way in which we are fueling emotions unknowingly perhaps, but to have this different stance, this different relationship, or to just like sit next to you or be friendly towards really stops fueling them, the ones that are most difficult, and starts to create the conditions in which there can be this calming, this settling down. Okay, so how do we do this, like make friends with this whole idea? Well, first, I want to say we start where we are. We start where we are. We are not being asked to be somebody that we're not. Because some people, they feel quite comfortable with a whole wide range of emotions. Some people feel kind of like disconnected from their emotional life, and maybe they're not even sure which emotions they're feeling. And some are kind of like afraid of their emotional life. And for me, I would say this probably what I was. I had this real hesitation and kind of like wanted to be at arm's distance from my emotions, because it seemed like it was just a hassle. And it turns out, though, you can't really do, well, I guess you can. A person could live their life that way. But it's, then you're kind of living life from a distance in a way that's not necessarily connected. So we start with making friends, some acceptance, some compassion. And when we do this, we're maybe like the person who builds the fence around the poison tree. Okay. So maybe I will say that this is often uncomfortable, sitting next to emotions, especially the ones we don't want to. It's not easy. And learning to do this is not fast. But it's a little bit like getting into cold water. Like maybe you just put a little bit in. It may be like, okay, that's enough for today. But then, you know, maybe you do the same the next time and the next time and the next time. But maybe after a little while you realize, oh, I can get more than just a half of a foot in. I can get my whole foot in. Or then, you know, maybe I can get to my ankles in or something like this. So there's this way of just we start where we are, take our time, recognize it will be uncomfortable. And then I like to offer three doorways in to how we could be with our emotions. One is posture. It makes a difference if we're, you know, kind of slouching and collapsed than if we are sitting up. And maybe there's tears that are falling down. Maybe there's heat in the face. Maybe we want to just bolt. But as best we can we just sit up? And maybe a way that we are showing respect for the experience. When I'm teaching retreats, it's not uncommon that people have tears. You know, things come up. And they want to like leave the hall or something. I'm saying, no, just stay in the hall, but sit upright. Let tears come. You can use tissue if you need to, if you'd like. But there's nothing to be ashamed of. There's nothing to hide. Humans have tears. Humans have anger. And can we just meet it? So one doorway is posture. Can we sit upright and have this... And there's a posture of groundedness and alertness and respect for our experience. The second doorway to befriending emotion is the breath. And I would say, you know, mindfulness, where just being with the experience of breathing. We're not modifying the breath. But I would say here, it can be helpful to intentionally modify the breath slightly, to extend the exhale just a little bit, not an exaggerated amount, just a little bit, kind of like helps the nervous system to kind of like get calm and allows for the more ease to arise. So to extend the exhale just a little bit. If you feel kind of like dull and disconnected, maybe just emphasize the inhale Again, not exaggerated, maybe just a short duration longer, or maybe just pay particular attention to the inhale, and sometimes it might have a sense of brightness or it can bring up kind of the energy. And then to explore the somatic experience. Where is this emotion being felt in the body? Is it in the chest? Is it in the belly? Is it in the face? Are you like gritting your teeth? Is there pressure behind the eyes? Sometimes the shoulders go up to around the ears. And as best you can, to like allow the thinking, the spinning to be in the back and to be with the emotions, the somatic experience in the front, in the forefront of the experience. And so this shift in focus, this shift, this inclining the attention towards the physical sensation helps us connect more directly, because the thoughts, of course, are going to be spinning out. It helps us to stay without getting lost in the story, but maybe to stay with the experience so that we can actually see how it does rise up in intensity and then it diminishes. And to see this again and again is so powerful. But often we don't see it because it comes up and then we're off running in the story and then we're distracted and something else happens. But if we can create the conditions in which we can be with it as best we can start to see, oh yeah, it's okay. It arises, it's uncomfortable, and then it diminishes. Just to see that again has a big impact on the psyche. So when a wave of emotion arises, like a strong emotion, one that's uncomfortable, grief, fear, anger, we might remember that, oh, this is energy that's moving through. This is what it means to be human. And this also can be part of our life, can be part of our practice. And we don't have to cut down the trees. Instead, there's a way that we can make medicine. We can learn from the difficulties and discover the ways in which it connects us with others. And maybe there's a way, maybe we can start to see, oh yeah, this anger is on top of some sadness. And maybe this sadness is on top of some, it's not uncommon that people have some shame, like really down deep down. But they're angry all the time, so they're not feeling these different levels of emotions. And some of the medicine might be to help us to see the breadth and the depth of our emotional life in such a way that it makes our life richer and maybe brings more clarity, brings more freedom to our life. So this idea of these three different ways of this poison tree, of cutting down the tree or putting a fence around it or making medicine out of the fruit. I like this story. I tell it maybe too often, but I like kind of this recognition that there's more than one way. And maybe with some emotions in some settings where like, oh, nope, I gotta chop this down. And maybe with other emotions and other settings, we can hold it and be with it. So I'll end there. And now I'd like to provide an opportunity for you all to talk about this amongst yourselves. And maybe something that I didn't talk about directly here is it's not uncommon to have resistance, using this word resistance. Resistance to the emotion, resistance to working about it, resistance to even hearing about it, and resistance to resistance. This is, of course we do. Of course we do. So I want kind of want to sprinkle in that resistance to this whole notion, as we could say, is one of the emotions too. So we can just meet the resistance. Can we befriend the resistance? This is a natural part of this work of being with emotions. So maybe we'll talk about that in the small group, this resistance part. Because if we all knew this about emotions, we would have a rich, beautiful emotional life. And as I'm often saying, you wouldn't be at a meditation center on a Thursday night. You would be having this beautiful emotional life, and you would be have this way in which you felt like you didn't need meditation as a support or something. So let's get into groups of three again, but this time let's use the last digit of your social security number. We'll put the odds over here and the evens over there. And we'll stand up, and then we'll all put you into groups of three, and then I'll give you the question. Okay. Yeah, I'm over here on the, yeah, that's interesting, right? Yeah, right?
Where were the evens again?
Yeah, here. Okay. 0, 2, 4, 6, 8. Well, opposite in terms of like there's more people over here or something like this. Or did I? It doesn't matter. Okay. So how about... yeah. So let's have Seth and Carrie and Evelyn. Well, I'm just going to make random groups here. And then Susan and Bill, and I'm sorry, I forgot your name. Tram, the three of you. And then, because Liz and Yen Kui were together last time too. So Susan, can you come over here with Yen Kui and Tram? And then Liz, you're with Joanne. Yes, there we go. Look at this. All right. Okay. Phew, that was complicated. So I have a question for you guys. So here's the question. When resistance shows up, how does it show up for you? How do you know that there's this resistance? Like, oh, I don't want to feel this. Maybe like chopping down the tree. Sometimes it feels like distraction. Maybe it feels like, oh, just maybe there's a feeling of speeding up or collapsing down. And what would it be like to make friends with resistance? Resistance to feeling emotions, for example. What would it be like? A, how do you know when you're experiencing resistance? And then B, how can you make friends with resistance? And it's okay if you're saying like, you know, I'm not sure how resistance is or how it's experienced or something like this. And we'll do the same thing where one person speaks and then it goes to the next person and then it goes to the next person. And then maybe it goes around more than once. And we'll have about like 13 minutes here. Okay, thanks.